You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
Welcome into just another sports podcast here on the Sports Objective Podcasting Network. As we sit here on a Wednesday night watching a little Pirate hoops as the Pirates are struggling with South Carolina upset as we are live. Hopefully that changes as the game goes. But anyway, joining me as always this week, my co-host, the one and only head coach of Northeast Academy from beautiful Lasker, North Carolina. He summers in Richmond. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stevie Fly.
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing. It's a Wednesday night. Thanksgiving's next week. Yeah. No surgery tomorrow. I'll put that off for the time being. So, otherwise, I probably wouldn't be doing the show tonight. I'd be so nervous. But
Oh yeah, definitely. Well, you hearing that echo?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, that's Greg. Hey, you got and welcome. First, before we address the echo, we will welcome in from East Carolina football past, most notably from the Peach Bowl season. He played here the 91 and 92 season, Mr. Greg Grandison. Greg, welcome in.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
We got to echo, Greg. I think at your speakers. Have you got your speakers up loud?
Yeah, I think I do.
Yeah. Huh? Well, we didn't want to lose all of you. There we go.
There you go.
All right. Yeah. Well, we'll see if that echo goes away.
Is that better right there?
We're still hearing it. We'll deal with it and just go from there. Greg, so we're going to start from the beginning. That's a good place to start. I'm not going to start at the very beginning. I'm not going to ask when you were born and all that. But just talk about how you got to East Carolina from the junior college ranks by way of Florida, et cetera. How did you become a Pirate?
Started off at University of Florida, 88, under Galen Hull. Got redshirted my freshman year there and proceeded to get on the field my second year. And long story short, you know, kind of had a rough freshman year, of course, coming in. And got into a little altercation off the field that led to my dismissal. That's when the University of Florida made the transition from Galen Hull to Steve Spurrier. Had the opportunity to go through summer practice. No, that was Coach Spurrier. Never really actually played, you know, in season with them in a sense. But that summer, I got into an altercation, of course, which led to my dismissal, and I had to go to JUCO for a semester because of how the timing was when my dismissal happened. So went to Purvis Community College in Mississippi, one of the toughest times of my life.
Purvis?
You know?
Did you say you went to Purvis?
Pearl River Community College in Mississippi.
Oh, Pearl River. Okay, well, I know I'm familiar with Purvis Community College. I'm sorry, I thought you said Purvis, but I'm also familiar with Pearl River. There's a lot of good community colleges with good football programs in Mississippi. But go ahead.
Very good, very good. And proceeded to go to Pearl River Community College. Had an awesome time there in that little five month stay or whatever. Led the league or conference in interceptions. Was totally committed to Ole Miss, believe it or not. I took a trip to Mississippi State. Had an opportunity to go out to Oklahoma State, but I declined it because I knew I wasn't going that far from my family. And as I was about to, probably about a month, about a month in getting ready to sign with Ole Miss, Bill Lewis show up, wide receiver coach at the time. I can't think of his name right now. Good God, he probably killed me. And he showed up and we talked and he coerced me into taking a trip to East Carolina. I say, if I take the trip to East Carolina, I guarantee you'll be a Pirate. And sure enough, I took the trip and had a blast, you know, my recruiting trip and met my one of my best friends, Anthony Davis, there on the recruiting trip. And I'll never forget sitting in the Hilton Hotel we both were saying, like, hey, man, if you come, I'm coming. Right? And we shook on it, and well, you know what, man, I was a Pirate. You know, one of the best decisions I ever made, so.
What was your first impressions of Greenville?
I was kind of taken aback coming from the University of Florida because of how large Florida was and, right. and how it's like a little small in a sense when I came, but I can recall walking throughout the campus, me, you know, Tony and I looking around, you know, at everything. And I was like, it doesn't matter where you play it. And it just so happened, one of my friends from high school that I played against, Errol McCorvey, had just left East Carolina and he transferred to Florida State. And Errol and I talked and he like, man, it's a great place, you know. And I met Robert Jones, of course, and he was the guy that I kind of followed in a sense because he had the high profile name, and met Jeff Blake on the recruiting trip too as well, and kind of like, you know, I'm cool. I mean, it's definitely a place, man, that I can perform and hopefully turn some things around, because when I first got on campus, they gave me a list of teams they hadn't beat, you know, South Carolina being one of them, and Virginia Tech, so. Being the other, so but yeah, great small town, great community, fun people, man, fun people. Had a great 2 years there.
So you come in at the right time, obviously, going into that 91 season. Talk about, you know, were you here for spring ball or did you not get here until fall camp?
I didn't get there to fall camp. Initially, when I signed, I was supposed to be there that spring, but my mom was going through some stuff in Florida, so I didn't show up until August.
So you get here in August.
I'm sorry. I did go to spring ball. Excuse me. I didn't go to summer camp. Excuse me.
Okay.
You know. So yeah, I came in January.
Okay, came in January. You part of spring ball.
Right.
And then you couldn't take part in summer workouts, and then you come back. And for fall camp. So, you know, you walking in here from junior college, you were at Florida for a year. Did you realize how good this team could be prior to the season starting in fall camp, et cetera? Did you know this team had that team had the potential to be 11-1?
Man, this may sound crazy to y'all, man, but I'll never forget when I first showed up in August. And Coach Connors made us run, and man, we was all throwing up everywhere on the field, man. I'll never forget that day. And we go into the locker room, and we kind of like looked around at each other and was like, man, we got to make this stuff pay off, man. I can recall, man, like, because it was tough. It was tough. I mean, Coach Connors was crazy, man. But Bill Lewis' biggest thing was, you know, we're going to win in the fourth quarter. We're going to find a way to win in the fourth quarter. And that became our motto. Initially, man, when practice actually started, like, you start getting to the rhythm of practice and you start looking around at how efficient Jeff Blake was, throwing the ball, running the option. Hunter Gallimore, man, I mean, one of the sneakiest receivers I've ever seen, man. I mean, just so deceptive. Deion Johnson was a blazer, you know, one step and he's gone. Clayton Driver, Mr. Hands, I call him because he had the best hands in college football, you ask me. Offensively, man, they were loaded, man. They were loaded. On our side of the ball, man, it was just a matter of us just, like Bill Lewis say, man, you know, he don't mind us bending, but we will not break, you know. We got to make him hike the ball over and over again. You know, we had people up front, the Greg Gardells, Robert Jones, of course, at linebacker, Jerry Dillon at DN. You had Chris Hall, man, the leader of the secondary. Fields, I can't think of his first name. Fields, he was a strong safety at that time. I mean, we had pieces, but we had to play hard though. We had to play hard. We had to understand the game. We had to do film study. We had to know There was no guessing. You had to know. So, but looking at it, I didn't expect us to go 11-1. I'll be honest with you. You know, if that's your question. I figured, man, 8-3, 9-2, maybe. You know.
So, talk about that first game, and a lot of people talk about that first game a lot. As you know, I know there's no such thing as, I guess, as a good loss, but you guys losing to Illinois and the way it happened, because you come back and then you get that controversial penalty that kind of kept you. I say to this day, if that penalty doesn't happen, ECU wins that game. Coming off of that, you know, playing at Illinois and having them on the ropes like that, did that kind of tell you guys, you know, okay, we should have beat them. We can play with anybody now. We know.
Oh, yeah. That definitely instilled confidence. That's for sure. And looking, you know, when we talk about it, you know, when it happened at that time, of course, you look back and you go over film study, like, oh my God, man, we left so many plays on the field. I should have intercepted this ball. I should have been in that hole. And that's when you start saying, hey, you know, if we just stick to our assignments and play tough, man, you know, we can play with anybody.
Yeah.
And again, Bill Lewis was a great psychologist because he always had something for you, man, every game, you know. So it was never too big for him. He always, you know, I'll handle the media. You guys just go out and just play. I got this, you know.
So after the Illinois game, you guys come home and you play Memphis, who had just upset UCLA, if I remember right.
Right.
And you win that one. You guys get on a roll. When did you start to realize how special the team was? I heard a lot of guys say the Syracuse game, but the South Carolina game the week before was a big point in the season.
To me, the South Carolina game was funny to me because, I mean, the guys talked about it, about how they never beat South Carolina. And me coming from the SEC, playing in Florida, you know, I was like, are y'all kidding me? Just watching the film stuff, like, man, this ain't Auburn we're playing against. This isn't Georgia, you know? And that calmness, I felt like, helped the team in a sense, because they were like, man, you crazy. No, man, I'm going to show you, you know? And I mean, they had a decent team, but nothing like we were capable of. I mean, you know, that South Carolina game just constantly, you know, showed us that.
Stevie, can you hear Greg? I can't hear him.
You can.
There you go.
I'm sorry. I saw the Syracuse game. It's a game that had us scared in a sense, because we went in the halftime, man. We was like, man, you know, what's going on out there? Because, you know, we left a lot of touchdowns or field goals or whatever you had on the field. We botched a lot of plays, you know, defensively. And Bill Lewis went in the locker room and said, and I'll never forget this, man. He said, man, just play tough. Keep doing what you're doing, because we're going to win the game. Make them drive the length of the field every time. We are not giving up big plays. Don't give up big plays. You know, I think we had just given up one just before half, long touchdown pass, you know, and we went out the second half and to fruition, man, we just made them drive the length of the field, hike the ball over and over. We got a play here, a stop there, a fumble, whatever, an interception. I mean, they didn't score the second half at all. So I think the Syracuse game is a game that really punctuated that entire season and so forth.
Talk about arriving back home into I don't know. I don't know if you guys flew back into Greenville or Kinston at that time. I think Kinston.
Yeah, Kinston. Yeah, flew into Kinston.
Talk about the crowd when you got back from that Syracuse game. How many people were at the airport?
That was phenomenal, man. That was. I'm getting chill bumps now, man. I mean, that was phenomenal. I mean, to see the fans show up in Kinston, greet us, you know, coming out of the airport, man. It was total chaotic, man. Total a blast. I mean, you know, great.
Were you guys expecting that at all?
Zero expectations, man. did not see that coming.
What time was it? Like late at night when you guys landed?
If I recall, it was probably around 11:30, maybe 12:30.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so it was kind of late. I would say around about 11 though.
I can beat that one. In my younger days, when I was in my 20s in 2006, right when we're starting to rebuild the program from, you know, the John Thompson era over to the Skip Holtz era, we had just beaten Southern Miss on the road in overtime. And I went and met the team at the airport at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So some of us are that sick, but I would have been there, Greg. Had I been locked in 91 at 11 years old, I would have been there. I would have made my mom and daddy take me.
Trust me.
But then you guys followed that momentum up into probably one of the iconic football regular season football games at ECU, the Pitt game. I will tell you this: I've never heard it as loud as it was, and you being on the field. How was it when Jeff Blake scores that 2-point conversion? How loud did it get? Because I've talked to some of your teammates. They said it felt like the ground shook when.
Man, it felt like I said, an earthquake, man. Because and again, Bill Lewis, like I said, man, he always had the right thing. He always knew the right words to say, the mind game to play. I never forget it, man. Man, we're gonna win the game. Make no doubt. Don't even question. Don't have no doubt. We're gonna win the game, and Jeff did the miracle, man. You know, I wouldn't call it a miracle, but he did his thing. Jeff Blake did his thing, man.
A lot of people forget after that 2-point conversion. A lot of people think that was the last play of the game if you weren't there, and it was not. You guys had to go out and make a stop, and basically time just ran out on Pitt.
Oh man, that was the easy part there because Fred Walker and I mean, we knew they had to pass down the middle of the field, based on the defense that we called and so forth. So there was no getting any out routes or stuff like that. So they had to we forced them to throw the ball in the middle of the field, you know. And Fred and I, you know, being sure tacklers, I mean, that we weren't going to allow them to do that. So,
yep, we've got a comment, William Landon. Said, great memories of Grandison's playing days at East Carolina, a key part of that 91 defense. Definitely a part of. But I know, and I don't know if you were privy to this in practice, but some of the offensive players that I've interviewed over the years have told me that Bill Lewis worked all week on that 2-point conversion play, saying that it was going to come down to that 2-point conversion, you know, it was going to come down to that play at the end. Y'all were going to need that play at the end. Did you ever see anything like that in practice?
On that, I can say as far as being a defensive player is that he always told us that, you know, it's going to always come down to like the last play of the game, whether it be defensively or offensively. As far as what at that time, I think Steve Logan was the offense coordinator.
Right.
And I think Coach Logan, I mean, his play calling was phenomenal, man. But I'm just happy that whatever they worked on during practice that week paid off in the end because, I mean, they again that was definitely a miracle that Jeff pulled out, man. Because
definitely,
and I keep saying miracle, but we kind of knew he was gonna win because Bill Lewis constantly would say it like, man, we're gonna win the game. Make no doubt about it. We're gonna win the game.
And you know that between that and the Syracuse game, that pretty much starts the We Believe campaign that year. That was the slogan all year long. We believe, no matter what, we believe. You guys, you know, go on to keep that hot streak going with a win over Tulane. Now talk a little bit about it, because this was like the big rivalry for ECU back in the day. Talk a little bit about playing Southern Miss, because that seemed to be the big rivalry for ECU back in the day. And, I mean, this game was a blowout. You guys put 48 on the board against them. But what was there – did you feel that rivalry with Southern Miss?
Zero. I, 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 me, me, me having played JUCO in Mississippi and had the opportunity to go and see Southern Miss play, it was different for me because I was they weren't as talented as the other, as the previous team that we played. So we kind of knew that if we just showed up. I hate to say it like that, but if we just showed up and just gave them our A game, that they would quit within the first half, and they did.
I mean, that Favre kid was pretty good.
They literally quit the first half.
That Favre kid was pretty good.
Yeah, who was the quarterback at Southern Miss then?
Some kid named Favre. I don't know whatever happened to him.
No, Brett was gone. He was gone.
I thought Brett was there in 91.
No. I think Brett left in 89.
This guy's name was Tommy Waters.
Okay. All right. Forgive me.
Yeah.
Forgive me. Okay.
I do remember.
Where you go back and edit that out of the podcast like it never even happened?
I do remember, though, listening on the radio and hearing Jeff Charles the first time I heard it, that when Favre was there, talking about Brett Favre, because they were talking about the wreck, coming back from the wreck. And that he had come out of, and then I said, "What the heck is a Favre?" And then the rest is history. Though I guess it worked out pretty good for him, I guess.
Yeah, I really think the rivalry between East Carolina and Southern Miss really took off in the Conference USA days, and this is obviously prior to that. But in those days, Stevie, I would say our biggest rivalry was Virginia Tech, and
that's the next game.
Yeah, and obviously, that was a big one, Greg, where Virginia Tech was still trying to get bowl eligible. A lot of people, I remember, I think that was when Corso, looking back at things, Corso picked Virginia Tech to upset East Carolina that day. And, you kind of had the play that was the turning point in that game with, was it a 93-yard pick six? Or what was the play? You tell me.
Well, I'll say going into the Tech game, everything that could have went wrong, man. You know, we had no idea. Like the first half, we were like totally like, man, what are we doing out here? You know, I mean, luckily they were making mistakes as well. You know, because if they really wanted to, man, they could have just pounded us because we came out flat. And I'll say, going to halftime, that was the first time that we were all looking at each other like, hey, man, what we doing here? Like, what's going on, man? Once again, Bill Lewis playing mind games with us, every mistake we done, we've made, we got all the mistakes out the way the first half. Let's go in the second half. Let's show them what Pirate football is all about. And I can recall, trying to be overly aggressive, me being – a hard hit. I slammed a damn dude out of bounds. Excuse me, didn't mean to curse, but I slammed a dude out of bounds and got a 15-yard penalty. And I never forget, man, Coach Cassidy, hey, you gonna make that up? I know, right? And I'm like, man, I'm trying to do something, man, just get me going, let alone the defense going, because they were killing us at the point of attack, man, just running the ball. And somehow, some way, man, they decide they want to pass the ball, and just so happened, they try to do a crossing route to the tight end on goal line, which we went cover zero, so that's my man because they went pro set, and I just stepped in front of the ball, man, with 98 yards, so that kind of got us back, momentum wise and so forth, got everybody back into the game, and you can see it pick up offensively and defensively from that point on, so.
Yeah, a pick six can be such a momentum changer in a game, and in that one it was. Pirates going to beat the Hokies in Blacksburg. At that point, you still had was it just Cincinnati left on the schedule?
Cincinnati.
So you just had Cincinnati. So you knew basically the Peach Bowl was locked up unless you – what was the Peach Bowl? It seems like you got the Peach Bowl invite.
Yeah, it was locked up. Yes, sir. It was definitely locked up, Kyle. It was locked up for us. We already knew. Just a matter of us just going out handling business against Cincinnati.
Okay. And so a question I've had for a lot of people, and I think the only person that's going to be able to answer this is Dave Hart, so we need to have him on sometime. What were the other bowl options? If you didn't get the Peach Bowl, what was the backup plan? Was the Liberty Bowl, Independence Bowl, What would have happened had y'all lost to Virginia Tech? You still would have probably went to a bowl. You know, you assuming you'd have beaten Cincinnati, you'd have been 9-2.
Right. I'm not sure about that. I mean, that's a good question, but I really didn't know because, again, we were independent. We weren't really in a conference or anything like that. So I didn't know, you know, as far as the alignment would be as far as bowls. So Peach Bowl was the only thing that I really knew of, you know.
Yeah, I've always wondered that and never been able to get an answer. And like I said, I think the only person that's going to be the answer is probably Dave Hart. So yeah, we need to get him on at some point. So you go to Cincinnati, you handle business, you get ready for the Peach Bowl. Turns out the opponent's NC State. Again, you know, you're not from this area, Florida background with the SEC. Did you understand or how fast did they make you aware what that NC State game meant to East Carolina fans?
The minute we found out that NC State was the team that we were going up against, the whole town of Greenville let it be known we cannot lose to NC State. So it was already stated to us from the people around you. I mean, you know, just being on campus, going outside of campus or whatever you were doing, you would hear, "Hey man, hey, kill them Wolfpacks, man, kill them Wolfpacks."
So is that the whole reason for the fourth quarter comeback? You guys were just scared to come back to Greenville without winning.
You know how disappointing that would have been, man, to the people of Greenville.
Yeah. Yeah, it would have been horrible. It would have changed.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, really, I really wonder how it would have changed how that season was viewed. I'm sure it would have still been revered as, you know, one of the greatest seasons in ECU history. But without that bowl win, it really changes everything for that season.
Man, that changed the whole trajectory of that team, man. Because it's like that's all for naught.
Yeah, you probably don't talk about this team as much. I definitely don't talk about this team as much if they lose that game like that.
Right.
But down 34-17. Now, this is one thing that granted, the offense is high-powered, and, yeah, they can score at any time. But that gets talked – the offense gets talked about a lot. But the fact of the matter is you guys on defense shut down State from that point on. I mean, you got – we don't if they score again, ECU doesn't win that game. So, what – I mean – what was the talk of the defense going in when you go down 34-17 that late in the game?
Man, that we were down 34-17. You know, our whole motto was like, let's just make this thing respectable, you know, and let's just try and get the offense as many opportunities as they can within, like, I think it was like the last, 11 minutes or something?
Yeah.
I want to say about the last 11 minutes. And I never forget Robert Jones, man. He was, you know, he was, hey, man, let's just go all out, man, you know, defensively. Hell, we done gave up 34 points. You know, we already looked like crap on the field, which we did. I'm you're hearing it from me, man.
Yeah.
You know, and lo and behold, man, we get a stop. Deion Johnson, man, makes a couple plays. Hunter Gallimo, and before you know it, you look up, you know, it's, you know, 34-31, something like that. I'm not sure, but.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I believe chance started happening. You know, the players on the sideline jumping around like, man, come on, one more stop, defense, let's go. And then Luke Fisher does his thing, man, and it's game over then, man.
You know,
when Luke crossed that goal line, I never forget Robert Jones, Chris Hall, you know, Greg Gardell's, those guys, man. Hey, we're going to go out here and close this thing out because we stunk it up so bad that the offense bailed us out, you know, which makes the second time the offense bailed us out because we look awful against Tulane, too. So,
yeah.
What would it – NC State played for the tie. There was no overtime yet. Had they made that field goal, you know – again, I wonder, how does that change the narrative?
Man,
if it was a tie game.
Man, that would have been the weakest thing for NC State to do, man.
That's what they tried to do.
They talked so much smack leading up to the game when we was in Atlanta, man, that that would have been the weakest thing for them to do, man, was tie that up, how they sold out.
How much talk was, when they lined up for the field goal out there, how much talk was going on between you and them out there on the field about, like, y'all really going to try to do this?
Man, we were like, man, come on, man. Come on. Come on, man. You know, I mean, a tie in a rivalry game.
And a
I think the head coach was, Sheridan, I want to say?
Yeah. Bill Sheridan, yeah.
Yeah, Sheridan, like, you know, you the guy, man, of the ACC, man. I mean, you know, you the big name coach here. You know, you didn't give us any respect. So,
well, I'll tell you this: Luke's play, you know, of course, you take the lead, gets a lot of play, and I'm gonna go back to defense again, and I'm gonna talk about Jerry Dillon, Charles Davenport breaks around the end. And if Jerry Dillon doesn't trip him up, he's got green grass in front of him for a while. And I think that was a third down play. That changes the whole outlook of the game right there. If he does, but that was a big, big play right there for the defense.
Man, J-Dog was making plays all year, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he covered up a lot of things, man, by just sticking the arm out. I mean, he's already, 6'6". 240, I mean, and could run like a daggum greyhound. So
it just looked like a prototype defensive end.
Yeah. I mean, J-Dog covered a lot of miscues up, man, on defense, you know, and you know, that's what happened when you play hard, though.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a hard, he's one of those dudes, man, was like a construction worker, man. He bought his hard hat to you know, to practice every day, and it paid up, and it showed off in the games.
Definitely. What was the feeling like when the clock hit zero and the field goal goes wide?
Yeah, total. It was electric. Everybody was ecstatic. Sideline goes crazy. Everybody hugging. Some people crying. You know, Robert and Jeff. You know, what a way to end, you know, their careers at East Carolina. Chris Hall. You know, so.
What was the locker room like?
Oh man, we were still on sky high. I mean, you know, and then you see the NC State guys and you just rubbing their face like, oh, you believe now, don't you? You believe now. You know.
So there was a parade, if I remember correctly, in Greenville to welcome you guys back. Talk about that. You're getting the national championship treatment, basically.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, like I say, man, the community, the people around Greenville, man. I mean, it was totally electric, man. I mean, you could do no wrong, man. I mean, even if you wanted to do wrong, you did right, you know, because of the expectation that, you know, that the community had of you. So, but I mean, everything, man, was nothing but love, man. Nothing but love.
So,
go ahead, Steve.
Then, you know, of course, we all know Bill Lewis ends up leaving, going to Georgia Tech. You got a change in command. How different was it after Lewis left for you guys?
It was tough, man. It was tough, you know, initially. With all due respect, you know, Coach Logan, you know, he brought a new defensive coordinator in, you know. I understand he couldn't keep Coach Cassidy. We were learning a new defense. New players coming in, you know, certain people, you know, that you in your heart felt like, you know, this guy's playing because this is his guy, you know. So it was always, you know, a little tension amongst players, right, based on, you know, what was going on and so forth. I do believe that caused a lot of friction, which called us losing games too. So
you feel, yeah, like a little divided.
We were. I mean, that's the right word to use. We were divided in a sense, because he felt like you're Bill Lewis guy playing for Steve Logan. Logan bringing his guys in, although they were freshmen, they were playing. You know, right. And again, I'm not knocking Coach Logan. I mean, he had a phenomenal run at East Carolina, man. I mean, you know, but
isn't it a little different than I don't know. I've never been a player, you know, wasn't in that situation, but you guys were in a situation where Bill Lewis didn't get fired. He chose to leave.
Right.
So I kind of wonder why there was that divide. You mentioned you felt like maybe some younger players were playing that didn't deserve to play at that point. But still, I mean, it seems like Logan was already there. It seems like they could have gelled it together and there wouldn't have been that divide. Who was the defensive coordinator that year?
God, I can't think of his name. He came from Texas A&M, though.
I know Ruffin was on staff. What were your thoughts of Coach Ruff?
Man, Ruff was phenomenal. He was somebody, man, that you could talk to regardless of what was going on.
You think things would have been a little different if he would have been your defensive coordinator?
Oh, heck yeah. Heck yeah. You're talking about an intense guy. I mean, Ruff was intense. He was fair, but he was intense. He made it hard. Coach Connors, the weightlifting coach, everything was still intact in a sense. It's just that we had new coordinators, young guys coming in, you know.
It sounds like that one defensive coordinator was probably just the – didn't fit. You can have – one bad apple ruins the bunch. Not that he was a bad coach or a bad guy. He just didn't fit.
I mean, I want to say we ran like a 52 defense. He implemented a 4-3, and it took some time to get adjusted to it. You know? And when you're trying to adjust to something that, like, well, you're supposed to be here, you're saying, okay, well, you know, we last year I was in the same spot, but no, that's not get that defense out your head. We're doing this now,
right?
And again, it was an adjustment period for everybody, you know. And plus, again, you had team, you know, you had guys that was replacing Jerry. Yeah, well, I think Jerry. Jerry was still. I'm sorry. Robert Jones. Yeah, some fronts. At least three or four guys on the front four that had to be replaced, Gardeil and two other people. So it's always young guys, but I mean it was a learning curve, you know. And then Coach Logan had his way, certain rules that Bill Lewis didn't have. I mean, you couldn't do this, you couldn't do that. So, you know.
Yeah. Just tough to adjust.
I tell you this, I was at the home opener your senior year against Syracuse, and the opening play.
That song.
Quadri Ishmael, the missile, and he showed why they call him missile. Because I'll tell you, when he got in open field, he was gone. I don't know.
Well, Steve, man, to your point, man, that song, the whole season right there, the first play.
Yeah.
In Finkland Stadium, man, when he took a toss sweep and circled the defense and went almost, 80 yards?
Yes.
You know, and you're sitting there like, dude, like, bro, what are we doing?
Yeah.
You know, how does this guy circle the defense with no containment? And again, I'm not making any excuses, but you had a bunch of young guys out there mixed in with us that was like deer in headlights. You know, you trying to get to a tackle, and you run into your own guy because he's being, you know, drug in your path.
It's so easy for that to happen. If one guy doesn't do his job, and just like you said, run into somebody else, he's not in the right spot or he's not doing his job. Something like that can easily happen when somebody's not sure what they're doing. And it's that you're like exactly right. That set the tone for the whole season.
That's the tone, man. I mean, I tell anybody that. You know,
I mean, at Ficklin that night, that place was electric before the game started.
Yes.
It was just like the life got sucked out of it as soon as that play happened. And I mean, that was just the opening play. But you end up beating Virginia Tech in South Carolina. And then this is a game me and you have talked about before, the Bowling Green game.
Oh, my God, man. Right.
I know you said in an interview we had before, you still haven't figured out what was going on in that game.
Man, it seemed like we didn't have a clue defensively. every time the offense would score, Bowling Green would turn around and score against us. And we're sitting there, man, what are we doing? Three people go up for a pass, two being defensive player, one being the offense, and the offensive player come down with the ball. Can't explain it.
Yeah.
I mean, everything that could have went wrong, man, that my senior year went wrong, that's for sure. You know, I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to make excuses. Man, we did not play as a unit. And it showed. The product showed on the field, man. I mean, that Bowling Green game, man, was the most embarrassing game I've ever been a part of.
Well, you beat Virginia Tech and South Carolina, you know, you guys finished 5-6. At that point, after the wins of Virginia Tech and South Carolina, did you guys feel like, here we go, we're going to go to a bowl again, and then things just kind of fell apart after that?
Well, honestly, Kyle, man, we were still trying to figure it out, man. I mean, seriously, defensively, we were still trying to figure it out. Because you got to think, even in beating Tech and South Carolina, man, we were giving up big plays.
Yeah, you look at the points given up that year. There was only two games where they did give up. They gave up less than 20 points.
Yeah.
The rest of it was, you know, you had a 44, 45, 42, 41, 42, 38.
Yeah, I mean, and by the time, man, we get to the Memphis game, I mean, we were like deflated, man. We were like,
yeah.
And I think in the Memphis game, I missed practice. Don't start the third play of the game. The guy goes 60 yards. Mm. Wow. Everybody look at me like, hey, man, if you was out, man. You know, I said, bro. If it could go wrong, it's gonna go wrong for us, man. I don't know how to explain it, you know. But by the time the Memphis game was over, man, we were done, man. We were like, phew, thank God this year is over.
William Landon is asking a question. Who was the toughest player you went up against in practice on that 91 team?
What was that now?
Who was the toughest player on that 91 team that you went up against in practice?
Man, Hunter Gallimore. I tell everybody, I call Hunter, man, Hunter Gallimore. Man, you walk up to the line, you see this 5'9", 5'10", little scrawny kid. You saying, man, I'm about to kill this guy. And you look up, man, the guy 10 yards down the field and caught the ball and got his hand up in the air. Yeah. I mean, Hunter Gallimore by far, man, you know. But Clayton, man, you knew what you was getting out of Clayton Driver. You know, nobody could really run with Deion Johnson. So
Deion was quick. That,
yeah. But Hunter Gallimore, man, Hunter Gallimore put you to sleep.
We talked to Hunter a while back, but I'd forgot. Hunter used to match up. They used to call it the what did they say, Kyle? The Gallimore versus. What was his name from Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh is Stephen Israel?
No, Pittsburgh. He played for the Steelers. Thigpen, Yancey Thigpen.
Oh, yeah, yes, okay, yeah.
They go up against each other in high school.
Okay.
Thigpen versus Gallimore. That's what they didn't call it the high school team. They called it Thigpen versus Gallimore. They had an epic battle in high school.
Hunter was tough, man. I mean, don't make no mistake about it, man. He's a tough dude, man. He's a tough dude. You know, he trust me, he gave everybody the business, me included. He gave everybody the business, man.
Greg, as proud as you are of that 91 season, I'm sure at some point you'd love to see East Carolina do something even greater and go undefeated.
What was that?
I said I'm as proud as you are of that 91 season and it being the greatest season in ECU history. I'm sure you would like to see an East Carolina team surpass that at some point in time and go undefeated.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, it was a great year, man. I mean, you know, looking at it, it's almost like I'm horrified when I look at East Carolina now.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm horrified when I look at East Carolina now. That's for sure.
Have you know, I think.
I think I caught a podcast or a segment where I saw the mayor, Alan Thomas, kind of like trying to light a fire up on the East Carolina, man, because I know how passionate he is, you know, about the program and so forth. But to see East Carolina where it is now, it's tough, man. It's tough.
Well, there's some people behind the scenes starting to wake up and give some money. So we had a $200,000 donation towards NIL today. So people are starting to get fired up. Whether Coach Houston's the answer or not, time will tell. I think he's going to have to win at least one more to retain his job this year. I don't think we're that far off. When you look at our defense, it's good, but offensively, yeah, it's dreadful. It is beyond dreadful, and no excuse to be this bad on offense. And the university fan base, football program, everybody, you know, we were so close the last 2 years. We had decent years. You know, it's going to happen again. We're going to have another one of those seasons. We're going to get back there, and we're not that far away. But what it's going to take is everybody pulling in the same direction. And, you know, one thing I think we lack here right now is strong leadership. And I don't mean at the football program level. I mean at the administration level. I just do not feel we have the strong leadership in our athletic department. I'm not knocking John Gilbert. I think he's a good man. But at East Carolina, you need somebody that gets out in front of it and motivates. A Terry Holland, a Dave Hart in his day when you were here.
Yep.
And I really believe that's really what we're missing. We need somebody that knows how to galvanize Pirate Nation.
Yep. I totally agree. And I don't know this coach, man, but I will say, I watched the SMU game, and you're right. Offensively, man, it was like, what are we doing? Are we serious? We're doing this on offense?
Yeah, no, and part of it is poor evaluation of talent at quarterback. Very not talented offensive line. We're going to have to hit that portal hard. And I'm pretty sure we're going to be making a change at offensive coordinator.
Yeah. When you leave that defense on the field as long as the offense has this year, I mean, and that defense, you ask, I don't know how much you've got to see them this year, Greg, but that defense has been top notch. I mean, was it that SMU game that we were pretty tight with them? Because I honestly thought the SMU quarterback was going to light our secondary up. But they did their job. It's just our right. Do the job and keep us in the game.
Yeah, defense has been stout all year. It's you know, the offense has let us down. This past week, we beat Florida Atlantic. Great effort by the defense. Great effort by special teams. And I'm hoping that I can roll into to a win over Navy. But yeah, we got to get this program back to what it was. And thought we were on the right track. Back to back bowl seasons, and have taken a major step back this year.
Yeah, I tell anybody, man. I mean, people want to come to East Carolina. The problem is, man, we just got to find the ones who want to be committed to East Carolina. You know, yep. I mean, the recruits are out there, man.
You got to find the right fits. And in this day and age of NIL and the portal, everything is so much more complicated with recruiting. You can't just recruit high schools like you used to.
No.
Now you got to be able to work the portal and offer NIL deals. And it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
So, Greg, tell everybody what you're doing these days.
Yeah, I'm up in Chester, Virginia, car sales another year, you know, doing my thing, you know. So if you need a car, come up to Chester, Loyalty Volkswagen, come see me.
There you go. You got any social media you want to promote?
What's that?
You got any social media you want to promote?
Oh, no, I'm good.
Okay, all right, just go buy a car from them there at you said Loyalty Volkswagen?
Yes, sir, Loyalty Volkswagen in Chester, Virginia.
All right, go buy a car if you're in the market for a Volkswagen, or I'm sure you got other nice used cars on your lot besides Volkswagens.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. So, Nissans, Toyotas, you know, you name, we got it.
There you go. So go check them out if you're in the Chester, Virginia area and in the market for a new or used vehicle. Hit them up.
Yes, sir.
Before we let you go.
Oh, here it comes.
Yeah, here we go. We didn't do this when I interviewed you before. I've come a long way since
that. Uh-oh.
We've got a segment called the 2-Minute Drill.
Uh-oh. So
you gotta put your thinking cap on. These are just quick hitting questions that,
First thing that comes to mind.
Yeah, first thing that comes to your mind. I mean,
gotcha.
You ready?
Ready.
All right. Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Favorite music artist?
Favorite music artist? Tribe Called Quest.
Lake or beach?
Always the beach, man.
You got to change that to beach or mountains.
Yeah, we need to put something. I'll give another one. Playing on turf or grass?
Always grass.
Okay. Favorite movie?
As of lately, John Wick.
I got you. Favorite TV show?
Believe it or not, man, Andy Griffith, man.
Hey, classic. Yeah. Classic.
What was that?
That's a classic. And I call Stevie Andy Taylor of Laughlin, North Carolina.
Yeah, he sure did. Last week I was called Andy Taylor of Laughlin. So.
Yes, sir.
All right. Pineapple on pizza, yes or no?
Oh, man, love pineapple. On pizza? Oh, of course.
All right. Favorite food?
Lasagna always, man.
Favorite place to hang out in Greenville back when you were at ECU?
Believe it or not, man, Mr. O'Cool's will always be the top spot. I don't know if it's still there, but Mr. O'Cool's, man.
Professor O'Cool shut down. The pandemic kind of killed it.
What?
Yeah, O'Cool's was – look, man, when we launched this thing back in 2018, me, Dave Richmond, Bubba Rosenbaum,
right,
lost the Force Objective. We did three live podcast parties from Professor O'Cool, so it meant a lot to us, too. And but no, it's no longer there.
Is anything there still?
Yeah, it is. There's something in place of it. I haven't checked them out.
Oh, okay.
So I can't comment on it if it's any good or not. But yeah, but O'Cool's is gone.
What was the name of that restaurant that had the freaking boxing ring? You remember that, Kyle? Or is that before your time?
I can't say it was before my time, but I never went there, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh gosh, I spent a bad night in that boxing ring one night. I mean, trying to eat a bacon cheeseburger. That was not one of my best times right there. But I cannot remember the name of that place. But
so you could box for your bacon cheeseburger?
Huh?
You could have a fight for your bacon cheeseburger?
fight for it. It was like Randy Savage, Randy Savage birthday today, by the way, guys. We talked about that before we went on the air. But toughest opponent you went up against, like individual opponent that you went up against?
Robert Brooks, South Carolina.
Oh, yeah. All right. If you could have played on any pro football team in NFL history, who would it have been?
Oh, man, always. Die Hard Raider, man.
Raiders. Oh, I thought you said
Dave and the Raiders, man.
Gosh, no Ravens here. No Ravens here.
Yep, diehard Raiders.
Okay. Favorite ECU moment?
Favorite ECU moment? Was watching Robert Jones, Jeff Blake hold up the Peach Bowl trophy, man.
Yeah. All right. And your favorite sport to watch? Is it still football?
Oh, yeah, of course. Football, definitely.
Okay. All right. That's a 2-minute drill. That's a 2-minute drill. I think we scored 6 on that one.
Well, touchdown. Big 6.
Appreciate it.
Greg, we appreciate you coming on with us tonight. I've been halfway distracted watching this basketball game. The Pirates trail by 3 with 2:28 to go. So hopefully we'll pull it out. Greg, thank you for coming on. I'd love to have you back on sometime. And
definitely.
Maybe we'll get you and some teammates on at some point and do a watch along from that Peach Bowl.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good, man.
All right.
Thanks,
Pat. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Stevie, good having Greg on there. The echo was about to kill me, though. but great guest. Most of the guys from that 91 team are always. You can tell they are very passionate. That kind of season kind of leaves a lasting impression, not only on the fan base of you, but on you and the expectations you have for the program.
But wasn't it interesting to hear him talk about how when he got on the team, all those guys were talking about, we've never beat South Carolina, we've never beat, and him playing at Florida, he was like, man, South Carolina ain't nothing. I mean, we're not playing Georgia, we're not playing Auburn. we're not playing Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that gave them, you know, that little bit of confidence going into that game, you know, from him to say, heck yeah, we can beat these guys. You know, they're not all they cracked up to be.
No, definitely. That kind of thing can be contagious. And, you know, you got somebody that believes it and they can get everybody else around you to believe it. And it's buy-in. And sometimes, you know, somebody, lots of times, you know, and that's something I think we've missed this year a lot. And it hasn't been talked about is leadership on the field, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. Yep. And that's what you're kind of talking about with him there, being a leader as a player.
So. Yep, definitely.
Well, Stevie, this basketball game has me super distracted. If we lose this game, I'm going to throw my phone through the TV. That'll be nice for the podcast. trail by two with 2:24 to go against South Carolina Upstate. This is not the defensive effort I expected to see. Got the Navy midshipman this weekend. Pirates coming off of a win. This is one I really want, despite how bad the season's been. I'm fired up to play Navy. This is a game that, to me, you know, it doesn't turn the season around to change anything, but it certainly would make me happy to beat Navy. It's always a tough task to go up to Annapolis to win. Navy still playing for bowl eligibility. To me, you go up there and get this one and then turn around and beat Tulsa, finish on a three-game winning streak, get really can set a nice tone going into next year.
Well, if anything, you know, you got to think about it with a season like this. You finish strong, it gives you hope for next season. You know, you got that momentum, a little bit of momentum. And it gives our guys that are coming back next year a little bit of confidence too.
Maybe it keeps these defensive guys, you know, you're going to have to pony up with some NIL. But yeah. Maybe a three-game win streak will make some of these young defensive guys want to stay around and not hit that portal.
Yeah, because
If you can keep this defense together, get a new OC in here, get a quarterback in here, a few offensive linemen, a few receivers, we could turn this thing around in a hurry.
I agree. And what was the score you picked last week for the Florida Atlantic game?
I think it was 24-17, I believe.
Okay. I didn't know what I knew it was close on ECU score.
Darren Hart, I believe, picked 24-7. He almost got it exactly right.
I knew there was one of us that got that was close, but I couldn't remember which one it was. I knew.
Yeah, I believe it was Darren. I think you. I think you had us winning by 10.
Yeah.
So we'll pick it for this week. East Carolina Navy. I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go 16-13.
You can go low scoring, huh?
16-13, Pirates win.
I'm going to go 24-21
ECU. 24-21
ECU, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, guys, there's one thing I want to say, too. When we talk about this team, about their struggles and stuff, it's not because we're not ECU fans. It's not because we want a coach to leave or anything. It's because we're seeing, you know, we're ticked off about it. We want to see this team succeed. And we're not trying to come down on the coach. We're not trying to get the coach kicked out of, you know, or anything like that.
If you and I can get coach fired by doing this podcast, and we are way more powerful than I realized. Exactly. It took me and a whole group of people to get Jeff Confer out of here. And that was an ongoing effort sustained for about 2 years of people flying airplanes and us printing T-shirts, us making that man's life a living hell as much as we could. So, no, we aren't going through that. No, look, if Houston doesn't win another game this year, do I think he deserves to be fired? Perhaps. But do I want that to happen? No, I want us to win out. I want us to win out and make some changes and, you know, finish strong. All right, we're down. I got to watch the end of this game, Stevie. We're down by two. 15 seconds to go. Pirates have the ball. Are they going to play for the win or play for the tie? It looks like they're going to play for the tie. There was a foul. I've got the sound off, so I have no idea if that was a foul or a timeout.
Well, we'll know in a minute if we hear the phone go flying through something. Hold on a second. Let me look at something.
Got 9.8 seconds to go. East Carolina 81. Excuse me, East Carolina 79, South Carolina Upstate 81. So, this is a very distracting trying to watch Pirate basketball do a podcast at the same time. So we're gonna finish this game here live on the air.
Yeah,
this will be interesting for the archives. This will be one that people will go back and when they listen to this, they'll know if we won or lost. So this is
I'm trying to pull mine up on my phone so I can see what's going on here.
I got it on TV, and then
you guys having a show after this?
9:30. Yeah, thank you. 9:30 or yeah, maybe not at 9:30, but sometime after the game tonight and after the podcast, folks, there's going to be a Pirate overtime. Hopefully, we'll be talking about a close Pirate victory. Right now, we're trailing by two. We're going to have to.
There was a foul, so they that was a foul.
Okay, so here we go. Pirates going to have a chance to tie it up. Let's see what happens. And you missed it. Yeah, boy. Now, at this point, you just missed this one on purpose to try to get the rebound.
Try to tip it. Yeah, get the rebound. Or
get the tip in. Yeah, tip in. That's a good point. Got to be careful not to get a goaltend. Well, he just made it. Now you got a foul.
Yeah, a foul. Jeez.
I'm not, I guess this makes good, good live podcast. I don't think this is going to do very good in the arc. You know what? Let's just wrap this up and then we'll watch the end of the game. So we're going to watch the end of the East Carolina Pirates basketball game. We're going to thank Greg Granderson for joining us tonight. Thank Bubba for producing. Sorry for the lack of professionalism as I've been distracted watching the basketball game here at the end. I'm sure most Pirates will understand.
Yes, they will.
So, Steve, you got anything else?
Yeah, just thank we want to thank William Landon for the comments tonight for chiming in. Go Pirates. Hopefully we get the win over Navy this week, and hopefully we can pull this game out.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so for Greg Anderson, Bubba Rosenbaum producing, and my co-host Stevie Fly, I am Kyle Barber. You have been watching and listening to Just Another Sports Podcast on the Sports Objective Podcasting Network. Good night and go Pirates.
See ya.